10 years ago, the CIA called it wrong on Iraq. The conclusion that Saddam Hussein had stockpiled weapons of mass destruction turned out to be flat wrong and played no small part in the decision to invade. A decade later, the issue is Iran and its nuclear ambitions, and again, the stakes are very high. It could involve a decision on war. Last night on All Things Considered, NPR's Tom Jelton reported on these questions after rare access to CIA analysts, where he found out how things have changed in the agency since Iraq and how they're applying those lessons. We'd like to hear from you. Has the CIA learned the lessons from WMD? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Tom Jelton's with us here in Studio 3A. Tom, always good to have you on the program.
Good to see you, Neil.
And are the CIA analysts worried about getting it wrong on Iran?
Oh, they're very worried about it. They're very worried about getting it wrong on any number of issues that they have to analyze, that they have to report on. But Iran carries, as you just said in the intro, because behind the decision of what to say about Iran lies the question of whether to go to war in Iran. And any time the decision to go to war is based on intelligence, then yes, the intelligence analysts have a lot to worry about.
In the case of Iraq, the U.S. intelligence got it wrong in 1991. They suspected Saddam Hussein had a nuclear weapons program. Turned out he had three and was much closer to a weapon than they knew at the time. Then, in 2003, they assumed he had nuclear weapons program, and of course other weapons of mass destruction, and they were wrong again.
You know, it's interesting, Neil, you said the word assumed, because this is one of the top lessons that the CIA has learned from this, is you just can't make assumptions. And that this is something that they now recognize, that their judgment in 2002, they prepared a national intelligence estimate, an official intelligence finding, that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. They now acknowledge that it was based on assumptions. The assumption that because he'd had them before, and they now know that he'd had them before, because he had used, we're talking here not just about nuclear weapons, we're talking about biological and chemical weapons. He'd used chemical weapons against his own people. He had kicked out the United Nations.
And
yes, exactly. And he had kicked out UN inspectors. So on the basis of all that, they assumed that he had those weapons. It was inferences, but it was not hard evidence.
And interesting, one of the quotes in your piece that I thought was most fascinating, just because you intercept a telephone call and a friend tells somebody something, that doesn't mean it's true.
Well, one of the things that I found interesting in talking to these analysts, Neil, was how open they were about the imperfections of intelligence gathering. That is with respect to signals intelligence. Signals intelligence, or SIGINT, as they say in the intelligence business, is electronic. Intercepted emails, intercepted telephone conversations, and so forth. And yes, you're right. They said that just because you hear somebody say something to someone else doesn't mean it's true. And, you know, there's a certain mystique associated with intelligence, and I'm probably some analysts or intelligence gatherers, you know, get carried away by what they've heard. The same thing goes for human intelligence. Just because you've got some human source who is in a prominent position who says such and such a thing is happening doesn't mean it really is.
So what has changed since Iraq? What have they instituted that will conduct things differently?
Well, I think the most interesting thing is in each department of the Directorate of Intelligence in the CIA, there is now what's called a tradecraft cell. There's a few specialists who are not themselves looking at the intelligence and making judgments. Their job is to teach the analysts there various techniques for checking their own biases, for considering competing explanations for some of the developments that they're trying to follow. They are checks and balances within the agency built into the intelligence directorate, and their responsibility is to say to these other analysts, look, have you considered this possibility? Have you considered your own the biases that you are bringing to this? And they help them with exercises, explore what their own biases are.
This goes back to, about 35 years ago. There was then the big dispute was over the capacities of the Soviet Union, and there was a Team B that was instituted at the time to challenge the findings of the CIA and say, wait a minute, no, they're much more capable than you think.
That's exactly right. And that Team A, Team B approach, Neil, is one that is still in use. In fact, a lot of these exercises that they have put in place at the CIA go back a number of decades. I mean, intelligence analysts have known about this, but they just were not using them. It's interesting. They now have this, I brought it with me, a tradecraft primer. This is a primer that analysts are supposed to follow in making intelligence judgments. It was only prepared in March of 2009, but a lot of the exercises in here, as you say, go way back. It's interesting on this page here, strategic assumptions that were not challenged. Mm-hmm. Beginning in 1941, World War II, Japan would avoid an all-out war because it recognized U.S. military superiority. That was an assumption that was not challenged and, of course, proved to be wrong. You mentioned... and then there's the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, a famous one. The Soviet Union would not introduce offensive nuclear weapons into Cuba. That was the assumption. It proved wrong. And then finally, of course, 2003, Iraq's WMD. Saddam failed to cooperate with UN inspectors because he was continuing to develop weapons of mass destruction. Another assumption proved wrong.
So how do you build in institutional skepticism?
You have specialists whose job it is to be skeptical, and then you have exercises that you force the analysts to go through before they make a judgment. The interesting one is this thing called the ACH exercise, analysis of competing hypotheses. When you as an intelligence analyst come up with a hypothesis, whether it's that Iran has developed a long-range missile, and the idea is to give it the capability to deliver a warhead to somewhere else in the mm-hmm. Middle East. That's your hypothesis. But you are now forced by your own colleagues to look at all the evidence that is inconsistent with that hypothesis, not the evidence that's consistent with it. That's too easy. You are required now to tally up all the pieces of evidence that challenge that hypothesis. And if those pieces of evidence, you know, if after considering all the contrary indications, your hypothesis still stands up, then you can go ahead.
But doesn't that raise another danger? And that is an analysis that says, well, maybe this, maybe that, we don't really know.
Exactly right. And that is a big concern. There is this notion in the intelligence community called making the call. And there has always been pressure, as the director, the deputy director of intelligence for analytic programs, Peter Clement, told me when he came into the agency in 1977, his bosses were saying to him, Peter, this is why you make the big bucks. Don't give me any nuance. Make the call. What's the answer? That's a kind of been a culture in the CIA. And now they have really put that aside. They moved away from it. But you're absolutely right. There is a risk that because presidents need to know, presidents and policymakers need to make the call. They can't afford to be nuanced. You know, they have to decide. President Obama had to decide, do I send the special operations troops in to get Osama bin Laden or do I not send them in?
So he can say, what's your best guess on whether he's there or not? So he says, well, 55-45. But that doesn't really help you make the decision.
It doesn't help the president.
Well, let's see if we get some callers in on the conversation. Our guest, of course, NPR's Tom Gelton. You may have heard his piece last night on All Things Considered, A Peek Inside the CIA. We'll start with Bruce, and Bruce is with us from Captain Cook in Hawaii.
Thanks for taking my call. I think there's too much emphasis. I appreciate the analysis, but I think there's much too much emphasis on the intelligence gathering and the intelligence's conclusion, and the reference to the Cuban Missile Crisis is germane. But the most important lesson of that crisis is that the generals and the military all wanted to attack, and the intelligence supported that conclusion. It was Kennedy's sense of history, I think, that made him make the right call, which went against the intelligence, to not attack, because he had the bigger picture in his mind, which is this could start a very big war, and this could be the beginning of the end. And
I think you're confusing intelligence with strategic advice. The intelligence was there were Soviet missiles in Cuba. They sent over U-2s and got pictures of them, and that intelligence turned out to be correct. You're correct, though, that the generals then said, we need to do something about it, and then President Kennedy made his decision. But, Tom, that's an instructive case.
It is, and I think that actually, that point, and it's a good one that Bruce made, goes to what we were just talking about, whether intelligence analysts should give the presidents and the other policymakers that they serve nuanced nuanced analyses, saying on the one hand, on the other hand, 50-50, because in the end, the responsibility, the judgment has to be the president's. You elect presidents that you hope have that sense of history and have a sense of what's at stake for the nation. And in a sense, you are, I think, doing them a favor by not saying to them, this is the way it is, and this is what we think you should do.
Bruce is also right that the intelligence agencies do not make operational or they're not supposed to make operational suggestions. Yes, the Soviet missiles are there, and you should do X or Y.
No, but when George Tenet, the director of the CIA, says to the to President Bush that it's a slam-dunk case, that certainly sort of takes President Bush off the hook for that decision, in a sense. You could make that argument.
Tom Gelton, NPR correspondent, with us here in Studio 3A. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Rebecca's on the line with us from Hayward, California.
Hi. I don't think the CIA is that stupid. I think that they know full well what was in Iraq, what it had and what it didn't have. And I think we should admit why we're really there was for oil, and also in Afghanistan for its mineral wealth.
It's hard to explain then, Rebecca, why the CIA would have been so issued such an embarrassing report when it was flat wrong.
Well, maybe it was worth it.
Whether we were in Iraq for oil or not, I can't say. I can say, however, that we were not in Afghanistan for mineral resources, because we were about to get out of Afghanistan and we have not gotten access to any of those mineral resources, which are substantial. China is the country that's going to come in and benefit from all those mineral resources.
Yeah, but haven't we made it easier for China to get in?
I suppose,
no,
but
I don't think that was the idea.
May not have been the goal. Thank you, Rebecca. Let's see if we can go to this is Jordan. Jordan with us from Charleston, South Carolina.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I think the intelligence community has learned from the Iraq war. And I think two of the things that were the most important parts was that in that case, the intelligence was politicized, which is something that ideally isn't supposed to happen. For whatever reason, the Bush administration wanted to go into Iraq.
And Tom, this is exactly something that you asked the analysts about in your story last night.
Yeah, they, in a sense, it would be easy for the analysts to say, look, we were pushed into this. They twisted our findings. They politicized the intelligence. They actually don't say that. I mean, there are a few intelligence analysts who say that the Bush administration, in fact,
Vice President Cheney.
Vice President Cheney in particular, as Jordan just says, were determined to go to war. And I think that history has probably shown that. But the intelligence analysts that I spoke to sort of fault themselves for not having highlighted their own caveats, their own uncertainties, the gaps in their knowledge. They take full responsibility for not having made clear the level of uncertainty that was central to those findings.
That had they done so, those people who had advocated the war might have looked at it and said, well, wait a minute, maybe we ought to think again.
Or they may have gone to war anyway. But the point is, they did not say that. And that is the point that they're making, that if they had underlined those caveats, possibly people in the White House or in Congress would have had more second thoughts than they did.
Jordan, thanks very much. And Tom, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about another story. And this was Secretary of State Hillary Clinton making sort of a remarkable statement that the United States has hacked into the computers of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and inserted effectively counter-propaganda.
Well, we're actually going to have a report on this by my colleague Dina Temple-Raston, who follows counterterrorism issues for us. What's not clear, Neil, is whether they actually hacked into those websites, because the websites we're talking about are jihadi forum websites. These are websites where people can sort of weigh in with their own thoughts and observations.
So there's access to them.
So there is access to them, and it's fairly easy for what the United States did in this case, I understand, is actually access those websites and posted comments on these forums. So it wasn't in the classic sense necessarily hacking, but it was certainly going onto those websites, using cyber tools to get onto those websites and post messages that countered the propaganda of the jihadis themselves.
These messages pointed out the number of civilians who had been killed in al-Qaeda operations in Yemen.
Exactly, because they know that has been a problem for
certainly
jihadi
was in
groups.
Iraq. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That has taken away from the popularity and the draw of al-Qaeda and other jihadi-type groups.
Why would we publicize that?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the truth is, Neil, that I think this is not the first time that the U.S. government has done something like this. It is the first time that the U.S. government has, in fact, as you say, advertised it. In the past, we've, kept mum about it. I don't have an answer for that.
And, of course, we've just seen a new call by al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula for jihad, that is to attack U.S. sites or maybe post propaganda on our boards.
Well, actually, it even went further than that, Neil. What you saw was a call by al-Qaeda looking for electronic jihadis who could, in fact, hack into U.S. industrial control systems. Now, this is actually much more serious. This would allow them to carry out physical attacks on U.S. infrastructure,
shut down power plants,
etc., through cyber means. That's what they're looking for, is some cyber terrorists who are willing to carry out attacks like that.
Well, more on this story, as Tom mentioned, later today on All Things Considered from Dina Temple Raston. You can find a link to Tom Gelton's piece on the CIA's intelligence on Iran. Just go to npr.org, click on Talk of the Nation. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Tomorrow, Talk the Nation Science Friday. Ira Flatow will be here. Have a good holiday weekend, everybody. We'll see you next week. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.